Welcome to the Analytics of Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara, and I'm finally doing it. It's been 6 months. I don't know if I'll ever get over it, but we're gonna try our best. The Buffalo Bills podcast is here. And the 6 months I'm referring to, of course, was the January 23rd game against the Chiefs that was just, frankly, a little bit too much to handle in terms of being a Bills fan. I try to be objective on this podcast with all things dynasty, but the Bills are, they're my team. And I started with the NFC, so I didn't have to talk about the Bills right away. Like, I wanted to get in a rhythm of this. You start with the AFC East, and all of a sudden, like, you got to lead off with them. So I went NFC first, and I've got a guest joining us too, so that's going to be great. My best friend in college is the man, Steve, is joining us to talk about this. So I'll do the dynasty breakdown, and then I'm sure we'll go a lengthy discussion on the Bills after that. So I hope you join us for the whole bit. But I needed him to get me as an emotional crutch. I needed him to get me through this. But all right, here we go. So the Super Bowl favorites. Like, all right, now don't fuck it up. Like, that's the key. You know, they lost Brian Daboll, which I don't think is an insignificant loss. Right, I do think that matters. He's going to go join the Giants as their head coach. The change in offensive coordinator, right? That's, I was like, back up the Brinks truck and do everything you can to keep him here. We'll see how that goes, right? You saw Josh Allen and Brian Daboll turn Josh Allen's career around. How much that was Brian Daboll, how much of it was Josh Allen. I think there's a blend there, right? I didn't necessarily want to find out what a divorce would look like between those two guys, but here we are. So we'll see. I got Ken Dorsey in there running the offense now. Again, he's been there. And we'll see how it goes, right? I mean, I think, listen, you've got the quarterback, and yeah, you've got the, what I would consider like the answer at quarterback. You know, things will change around him, and we'll have to see sort of how that evolves. But Ken Dorsey, fun fact, he also tormented me in my youth as the Miami Hurricanes quarterback when I was a big Syracuse fan, and they played together in the old Big East. So I think they won like a gajillion and a half games in a row at a period of time. And I don't think the Bills or the, I don't think Syracuse beat them. Like, it was a lot of losing to them. Maybe they beat them once, but yeah, it was a lot of losing to them. But I believe they had like a gajillion and a half game winning streak. You can fact check me on that. But yeah, so lots of change there, and some change in the offensive core too. Out with Beasley, out with Emmanuel Sanders. There's some shuffling along the offensive line, but they did some smart things. Extended digs. They bring in Case Keenum to fill in for Trubisky being lost. They bring in Jameson Crowder, which I think is, people will talk pretty highly of Crowder in the conversation of, is Gabe Davis, you know, the next big thing. And like, I like Jameson Crowder. Like, I think Jameson Crowder, I think he's a good player, but he signed for $1.98 million. That is his cap number. It's a 1 year deal. It's a $2 million base value with up to $4 million in incentives, 1.87 guaranteed. So let's hold our horses here in terms of what we're looking at. It's at 90th in terms of contract rating out of the wide receivers in the NFL. 90th, 90. So let's be trust but verify, right? Or one of those things where you say, okay, well, like, we like them, but let's see sort of how this goes, because they're not committing to throwing this ball 120 times to him, right? And that's, if we look really at his career, there's been limited opportunities for that to actually happen. So, but I do think his addition, when you look at what they need in their offense, a slot guy, like, he kind of fits that. It's just interesting, you know, it's kind of that Cole Beasley. But he's gone over 100 targets twice in his career, 2017 and then 2019. He has played 16 games precisely three times. He played 15 one other time, 12 twice, and 9 the other time in there. So he's coming off a 71 target, 51 reception, 447 yard performance last year on 2 touchdowns. So again, the lowest yards per target of his career, right? So let's be, yeah, like he can be interesting, but let's not put Jamison Crowder up at the, you know, the elite difference makers or really like let's not galaxy brain this thing in terms of like him being this big time answer. If he was probably a big time answer, like, they'd probably be paying him more than $2 million. That's just sort of my thought. Could he break out? Could he do those things? Yes. But let's not like write that in pen as an assumption in this offense. Some other moves that they did make include they brought in Duke Johnson. That was actually before they brought in James Cook. So I think and they were interested in J.D. McKissic. I think that is a clear signal. It's a clear indictment of what Devin Singletary has done. They also bring in O.J. Howard, and they ran like a shockingly low number of routes for their tight ends on a drop back basis. O.J. Howard gives them some more versatility. I actually think that this offense could be more versatile in the sense of, you know, they ran a ton of, we'll get into it in a second, they ran a ton of wide receiver routes at the top of the position, ran very little tight end routes, and really stunk it up in terms of the running back production. I actually think, like, how do you sort of diversify your offense a little bit? Some of the stuff, what they were playing some of that too high, you know, take the top off any sort of deep passing was really a lot of the approach that teams did with both them and Kansas City last year. Well, how do you do that? How do you sort of guard against that? Or how do you sort of, what's your counter to that? It's to diversify, right? It is to diversify. You bring in Crowder in the slot. You bring in O.J. Howard, who's got the ability to do some things in the tight end position. You could play him in the slot as well. You could, Duke Johnson as a pass catcher. They bring in James Cook, right? Like they do some stuff here that makes them, it gives them some multiplicity, right? It gives them some variety in their offense, which I think is an interesting thing for them to do. So I kind of like the trajectory they're on. Beasley and Sanders, losing them, like Beasley was more dependable, I think, in a couple years prior than he was really last year, and saw a decline in his stats. And Sanders was more of a ancillary threat in their offense. So you bring in this new core, right? You're just sort of shaping 3-and-D guys around a core group of guys. And I think Gabe Davis is going to elevate into that core group of guys, right? And I think the Gabe Davis theory that I have is it's a similar to a density theory, if you will, like sort of going harkening back to some AOD theory here. One of the things that, like, when we look at guys and we look at some of the replacement rates and the like there, one of the things I think we have to account for early on in a career is team draft someone in the 4th round and or on just day 3. We'll just use day 3. The person overperforms expectation and performs well. Like maybe they're a role player in year 1. You're like, oh, okay, well, that's good. But you still have that investment cost in him. And he's still only a day 3 guy. Right. And I think as much as teams sort of want to say, oh, it's about competition and all that stuff, like we're all humans, right? And we're all creatures of our own biases and stuff. So we get kind of anchored to what we thought about the person originally, which I don't think is an unreasonable conclusion to come to. You spend all this time evaluating a player, and, you know, frankly, in a year, he overperforms your expectation of him. And so what do? Well, you adjust him up a little bit, but you don't go crazy, right? Which is kind of what they did with Gabe Davis. So, like, we'll continue to get you some involvement, we'll continue to get you some run, but we're not going to just hand over the keys to you at the position. So what happens, right? He goes into another year at the position and performs pretty well. And what do? Right, their approach is different at that point. Right, their approach to Gabe Davis going into the 3rd round is different because they've seen it now for 2 years. They know that where his performance is at. Right? They see him taking big steps forward, and they can say, okay, like, we can kind of trust this a little bit more. We don't have to necessarily come in and supersede him. We can kind of add around him, but he might be an answer more than he is, than we've thought about him in the past, right? You see a big uptick for him last year in terms of yards per route run in particular. 1.29 in his rookie season, 1.62 last year. And actually, he ran like 130 fewer routes than he did as a rookie, which is interesting. It's almost the exact same numbers. He had 35 catches both seasons, 549 last year. He had 599 as a rookie. So he actually went backwards in terms of receiving yards last year, but ran a lot less routes. So he did basically more with less, very similar usage in terms of a third of the time he was in the slot, the other percentage of the times he was out wide. And his ADOT came down to about 14.5, down from 17.1 as a rookie. So, yeah, I mean, I think he's interesting. And I think, you know, if you double up his numbers, right, if you get him up to 120 targets, right, what does that look like? Well, it's pretty interesting in this offense, right? I would say that. I think it's a pretty interesting, it's a pretty interesting endeavor in this offense with one of the elite quarterbacks, right? And I think that you saw a step forward. And listen, what do? Right? Sort of the Gabe Davis theory is you see him for 1 year, you think, okay, like, maybe he's a part of a solution, but we're not going to sort of depend on him. They see him succeed again and overperform their expectations again coming in out of year two. And what's their approach? Well, now we don't necessarily need to invest as much because we kind of trust you. And that's really I think he's been the trust but verify type player for them. And now they saw it through a couple of years and they're going to give him more leash. That's sort of my presumption with him. Again, you look at how he did versus expectation. 1.55 expected yards per route run. That's not necessarily a huge number, right? That's about 67th percentile. So it's okay. It's not great, but he overperformed it with 1.62 yards per route run. So that's good. And that's in terms of overperforming expectation, that's a 67th percent outcome. So that's pretty good. When you look in terms of PPR points per route run, he ranked in the 75th percentile in that. Again, he was expected in the 79th percentile as well. So it's a pretty good situation for him overall. And again, maybe you get a little bit more, usage this year in a little bit more varied ways too. This may be not necessarily, you know, the thing I'd point to him and say, like, all right, is there an elite player here? Only 18% of his targets was he, or only 18% of his routes was he targeted on. That's really low. Like, when you look, Diggs was at almost 25%. Beasley was at 21. Emmanuel Sanders, interestingly, was at 13.4, which, when you consider that they kind of overlapped in a lot of ways, like, that there's an interesting aspect to the offense of, hey, was that teams just kind of trying to cap that vertical route there, that verticality, of really sort of selling out to stop that kept their targets per route run lower than you would otherwise expect them to perform. Like, that's a theory I think we could think about. But again, Sanders, he underperformed his yards per route run expectation and Davis overperformed it. So again, we'll see there how that goes, but maybe there's some more growth there that we could see with him. Again, I think the cost is more something that I'm interested in. And I've actually pivoted. Like, I think if you're interested in Gabe Davis, the Gabe Davis bet, I actually think you really should be interested in Marcus Valdes-Scantling, maybe even more so than Gabe Davis, because there's, I think, a target ceiling there for Marcus Valdes-Scantling that can maybe change your team. I'm not sure that Gabe Davis gets all the way home, but he's interesting, and I'm an interested party in the Gabe Davis wars of 2022. All right, so some other things here. The extension of Diggs keeps him here. That's good. Some 2021 summary stuff. They were 10th in terms of plays per game at 64.1, 43.2 dropbacks per game, that ranked fifth. 20.9 designed rushes per game. That ranked 24th. Designed pass rate was 64.6%. That ranked 5th. When you look at some of the early down stuff, right, that early down metric that we're doing, right, early downs, close games, basically, 64.3% pass rate, number one in the league. So really good stuff there in terms of, hey, we want to throw it. We want to throw it a ton. When you look at where they were as well in terms of how they ranked in EPA per play on those early down dropbacks, they ranked 11th. So again, throw it a ton, do it pretty well. Like, you just sort of just do stuff above average at a high volume, and they can really, really add up. That is one of the reasons why I think their offense is pretty good, right? I think you could take a peek at this and think of, say, hey, there's maybe some stuff left here on the bone. 24th in terms of target percentage behind the line of scrimmage, 27th in terms of short. That's 0 to 9 yards. And then they were 7th in terms of medium depth, 10 to 19 yards. It's a highly efficient place to throw the football. And then on deep throws, they were 12th in terms of their percentage ranking. Only 23rd in terms of yards per attempt. Again, some of that stuff that I think both the Bills and the Chiefs faced some of that too high stuff that was a little confusing, a little confounding to them early on in the season. They had to adjust. We saw some better success for them, I think, down the stretch of the season. I think that they've diversified in a way that might make them more dangerous. They were 33% of their dropbacks were play action. That was 3rd, so good high efficiency stuff there. We'll see how that changes with the new OC. Some of the stuff that I really think this stuff could change pretty dramatically is not the right word, but I think could change quite a bit. Running backs, 23rd in terms of routes per dropback for the position. They were 29th in terms of targets per dropback. This is a Devin Singletary indictment. We'll get to him a little bit more in a minute. Wide receivers, 3rd in routes, 3rd in targets per dropback throw. So highly involved, highly thrown to. 31st in terms of routes and targets per dropback for the tight end position there. So some capping stuff there. Some stuff here I thought was interesting on Devin Singletary. He ranks 7th in terms of routes per game among running backs in 2021. He ranked 36th in targets per game. He ranked 66th out of 67 qualifiers in PFF receiving grade. James Cook should get every opportunity based on really that lack of production from Singletary. I think he's pretty bad and people don't give him enough credit for his badness. And I think that the Bills drafting James Cook is probably something that we've maybe under talked about, because I think people generally like the concept of Devin Singletary more than they do as the player. First in terms of red zone plays, they ran on 45% of the red zone plays. That's the 22nd most often run rate. So again, just throwing it a ton is highly effective for them. 64.1% of their rushes were actually running back rushes. So when you combine and look at that, that's 29th. So a ton of runs for the quarterback. And basically non-running back runs. They did sprinkle in some receiver runs in there as well. But really, that's a Josh Allen. There's a ton of Josh Allen dependency in the red zone, both as a rusher and as a passer. So some really, really good stuff there. I think that's a place where Gabe Davis could really benefit for sure. Expected points, 21.6 expected points per game from the running back position. That is 29th. Again, that's a situation where it's a little bit capped for the red zone rushing, right? I think that's a little bit capped there, but I think that there's plenty of meat still on the bone for the passing game for a guy like James Cook. So we'll see how that unfolds. And we've seen some smaller guys get some decent red zone work as well, kind of in that little bit of a slash role that he could fit with a guy like Eckler, for example. So just because he's, quote, smaller, I don't think means that he can't be an effective red zone weapon for them. First in terms of expected points for the wide receiver position, 50 a game, 9.7 expected points per game at the tight end position. That ranks 28th. Again, I do think that there's room for OJ Howard, and maybe not necessarily from like a fantasy perspective, but from a on the field getting some opportunity perspective, I think that there is room for him to bounce back in his career and help this offense, maybe in a way that doesn't exactly help in fantasy, but he's one that I'm definitely interested in. And I think he's a good example of the types of bets we should be making in dynasty, right? Has been really good on low volume in his career, coming off an injury, really depressed value. Like, we'll take a shot in it. We'll take a look, see, and see what happens. And maybe he's the type of guy that can really juice up our offense. Like, that's a really good lesson to learn from this Bills experience. Do want to add in a little bit more context here on the receiver position as well. Diggs was expected for wide receiver 5 last year on a per game basis. He performed as wide receiver 10 on a per game basis, performed under expectation in terms of yards per route run as well. And then he was basically 4 touchdowns under expectation. So he had 103 receptions, 101 expected. So he overperformed, but underperformed by about 85 yards and just short of 4 touchdowns. So I do think there is more there on the there's more meat on the bone for him. Top 10 percentile in terms of expected yards per route run. Again, top 10% in targets per route run. Just outside the top 10%, they were 88th percentile in terms of yards per route run, 90th percentile in terms of expected yards per route run. So highly, highly lucrative, and ran a high percentage of routes too. He's 95th in terms of route participation. So again, there's a lot there to like with Davis or with Diggs, excuse me. The tight end position is one that I do want to make mention of Dawson Knox for a second. I think Dawson Knox, the situation is probably better than the player. When you look where he was at last year, he was expected for tight end 13 in points per game. He was expected for 7.9 receiving touchdowns on 48 expected receptions. So a huge percentage of those were red zone opportunities, and he cashed him in. Like, he did a good job. He had 9 touchdowns, but just be careful. Like, when you look at some of the ancillary metrics, like, this is not a particularly high value player. He's below the median in terms of the percentage of his routes he's been targeted on. He was actually 62nd percentile in terms of yards per route run, and he slightly overperformed his expectation by actually 0.2 of a yard, but it's still 1.16 yards per route run. So I do think there's some limitation there with him. His expected points per route run was at 52nd percentile. So again, it's he overperformed it, but I think it's some of the touchdown stuff, he's pretty dependent on it. And I in a world where he's not getting a ton of red zone looks, I question how much of a difference maker he can be. So he did well last year, 9th in terms of points per game, but I'm a little dubious there of that situation. And I do think OJ Howard can add something. So that's really the deal there. And then when we look down in terms of some of the value stuff, in terms of comparing our dynasty valuations to our redraft ones, Allen is at quarterback 1 in our dynasty marketplace, quarterback 1 at underdog, so no surprise there. Let's come back to running back here for a second. Diggs is at wide receiver 4 at underdog, wide receiver 9 in terms of redraft, or in terms of RDP. So liked a lot more in the redraft market than the dynasty market, which makes sense. Gabe Davis, this one I can't square. Wide receiver 35 in terms of dynasty RDP, wide receiver 21 in terms of underdog. If he's going to be available at cost in dynasty, and we're sort of giving away, we're getting a dozen plus spots of equity compared to the redraft market, that seems to me like that's a pretty good place to be in the Gabe Davis business. And here's the thing that I find curious about a lot of these dynasty people that are sort of poo-pooing this is again, you have a young, what's, how many times do we have a young player that is ascending up to a really good spot coming off of a really good performance, right? Like the recency bias is there, the elevation in a good offense, and the dynasty marketplace is like dragging their heels. I find that comical. Like this almost never happens. And so that's like, it's super, super rare. Like if his name was Jerry Jeudy, like good Lord, it'd be wild. But PFF projects him with 648, 1,100 yards, and just short of 8 touchdowns on the season. That would rank him, just checking here in terms of his numbers, that would rank him at wide receiver 21. So right on the number, basically, in terms of where he's at. I'll keep sort of rounding out this number here. Diggs is at 5 at Football Guys, and they have Gabe Davis at actually 29. So a little bit lower in terms of the yardage, actually. The receptions and the touchdowns are very similar there. Mike Clay, by way of reference, is at 106 targets, 63 receptions, 920 in terms of yards, and 9 touchdowns. That puts him at wide receiver number 26. PFF, the most aggressive of the yardage projections, I would say. And everyone else is pretty much similar in terms of receptions and touchdowns. So for what that's worth, I figured I would pass that along. One other thing that I think there is a competition here that warrants some consideration. Mike Clay has the split between these guys at running back. Has Singletary with 200 carries, 87 for James Cook. The split here, 56 targets for James Cook, 41 for Singletary. Singletary with 31 receptions, James Cook with 43. So that 43 to 31 split, just remember that for those two guys. And then you look for the Bills. At PFF, they have a marked split here. They project 38 receptions on 47 targets for James Cook, only 20 targets for Devin Singletary, and 16 receptions there. So there's a big split. They don't project a ton in the running game either for Singletary either. It's much closer. So for what that's worth, I think there is some difference there. In terms of those guys at Football Guys, we have Singletary with, he has 183 carries on 31 receptions, and then Cook is at 43 receptions for 89 carries. So we have him more on the Mike Clay range of the projections. But a little bit more in the middle of those two guys. So just for what it's worth, like there's a lot of variance there in terms of some of the projections for these guys. So keep that stuff in mind. And when you get, I think the easy way to think about that is when you get a big variety in terms of their costs, like when someone slides, right, that's an opportunity to address that uncertainty. Right, like when there's a lot of uncertainty, don't take it expensive, but make it a point to take it when it's cheap. Right, so again, if you're doing a startup draft and James Cook's falling pretty significantly, like that's a spot to get a share. Right, that would sort of be my thought there. They have PFF for way reference has James Cook at 36 in terms of his overall production, and have Devin Singletary actually behind him at running back 48. So they're an outlier there. So just keep that in mind. And then the tight end position, again, you have Dawson Knox is at tight end 11 in terms of RDP, tight end 9 in terms of underdog stuff. OJ Howard, tight end 46 in RDP, 40 in terms of underdog ADP. So there is, I think, some interesting, it's very cheap for Howard. Again, he's a very, on a route run basis, he's been very good in his career. It just hasn't really put it all together. So keeping that in mind, like, I'm interested in him deeper on in cost. Again, maybe it's tough in 24-man rosters, but if you get in some of these deeper premiums and stuff, I'm interested in taking a look-see with him off this injury and see what he looks like. So a little bit in-depth there for the Bills. This is going to be on the longer side. I do have Steve coming on, so I hope you enjoy the rest of this podcast. And until next time, continue embracing the variance, and we'll talk again very soon. Okay, welcome back to the Analytics Dynasty podcast. This is a special feature here. I have my college roommate, Steve, when I think of people to talk about the Bills with, I can think of no one better than Steve to do that with. So, Steve, thanks for making your initial appearance here on the Analytics of Dynasty Daily podcast, previewing the Bills. You are a long time Buffalo Bills fan, and
understatement.
Yes, season ticket holder for a long time. I've been to games with you. You worked their training camp when it was at our college. Mm-hmm. You are a fully invested Buffalo Bills fan. How does the following phrase sound to you as we sit here in July of 2022? The betting line favorite to win the Super Bowl is the Buffalo Bills at +650. How does that sound to you?
It feels amazing, but it's also scary at the same time. Don't want to let those perceptions down, but I feel like the team is in, a position to do it. But come playoff time, anything can happen. So I know we're going to get to that point, and it's going to be nerve-wracking, and I'm going to be screaming at the TV per usual, or hopefully at some games.
Right. Yes. It's funny because people kept asking me during the whole the trading saga, right, where Russell Wilson get traded to Denver, and then the Raiders are adding Devontae Adams and Chandler Jones, right, and all the stuff with Kansas City losing Tyreek Hill, and you just had all this change. Chargers make additions too, and people were asking me, what do you think of this arms race going on in the AFC West? And I was like, if it means that I don't have to travel to Kansas City in the playoffs ever again, it'll be too soon.
Yes.
That's the only thing. If it makes it more likely that we will host playoff games in January in Buffalo, I'm all in.
let's get Kansas City over to Buffalo this time. Right. I don't remember in the last 5 years, the last time Kansas City even came to Buffalo, even in the regular season. It seems like every time, we play them, even in the primetime games, it's always been in Kansas City.
So they were the Bills. Remember the game where it was like, it all started with Tennessee screwing stuff up, but it was Tennessee had basically no COVID compliance, like whatsoever.
I don't count their entire team got COVID like a week.
and it resulted in they had to change the entire NFL schedule around because of it. And as a result, the Bills and the Chiefs, I believe it was a Tuesday night game, and it was Clyde Edwards-Helaire ran 31 times for 165 yards. And it was the best defense anyone had played against Mahomes, because they were have it in 5 yard chunks instead of 9 yard chunks. And it was this brilliant thing that ended up losing, but it was kind of before the Bills really kind of took off that year. So it would have been, 2020, I think that game was, but going there in January, those flights need to be heading towards Orchard Park instead of towards Kansas City for sure.
Yes. Yeah. And I think for Cincinnati this last year, if they had to travel, I don't think they're in the Super Bowl.
I can't get over. So I can't. I just can't. I've recorded basically 20 of these. I waited to. I think I did the entire NFC first because I couldn't do the Bills to begin with, just because I'm still not over what happened at the end of last year. And so I did the whole NFC first. I basically did everyone. I have, you'll hear this one is one of the first ones, but I've done some of the other AFC ones just as it went along. But I still can't get over the fact that if you go back and look at how good Josh Allen was in the playoffs, right, he has the highest PFF grade by far, right? It's 95.8, which is just absolutely outrageous. It's a 92.2 passing rating, 9 touchdowns, 10.3 yards per attempt, 0 interceptions, 5 big time throws, 1 turnover worthy play. Just outrageous in 2 games, right? Just crazy. Took sacks on 11.1% of his pressures. So again, he was just terrific across the board. And you look at that game and it's like, you go back to that week where they play in the divisional round and it's Mahomes just goes like, he also goes thermonuclear in that game, right? He's 8.6 yards per attempt, 3 touchdowns, 2 turnover worthy plays, 0 big time throws. Like, he takes sacks on 9.5% of his dropbacks. Like, he's right there as well. And then the next week, like, this is the most traumatizing part of this whole experience, was the next week he was terrible, where he throws 2 turnover worthy plays, 1 big time throw. It's 7.1 yards per attempt. He throws 2 interceptions, 3 touchdown passes, but like, sucks in the second half. They sack him on 36.4% of the pressures. And I was like, you couldn't get him on the ground. Yeah. Like, you could not get him on the ground, yet now, like, he's sacked at a 4 times higher rate. All that is to say, I feel like Cincinnati got let off the hook by Kansas City, and
big time. That first half of that AFC Championship game, it was like watching the previous game, the previous second half that he had against Buffalo.
Right.
Except for maybe that last drive, I thought, you know, they went for it. I believe they met, you know, they didn't get in the end zone, which was huge. And I was watching that game, and that was a big moment in that game. But then he turns it to the second half, and he was probably the worst quarterback I saw all season.
It was brutal. It was brutal. Yeah. And it was like, so I've made, and part of it's probably intentional. Part of it's probably like, I'm taking out a little bit of my anger. Some of it is I think deserved, but I've made enemies out of the Cincinnati Bengals fans, which has been kind of fun. And the fact that
that's easy to do.
Yeah. And I'm basically like, you know, Burrow, like, I think Burrow got let off the hook by Mahomes. I think that his total career narrative would be different if Mahomes played remotely close to like what his normal was. It didn't, I don't know what happened at that game, but Burrow didn't beat him. He got kind of like let off the hook. And frankly, statistically, Mahomes outplayed him in the game. But anyways, like, Burrow takes a ton of sacks in the Super Bowl and everyone thinks it's his offensive line's fault.
I think a lot of people overstated his play and understated the play of the Cincinnati defense. They weren't, you know, they were solid all year, but come playoff time, all of a sudden they just really turned it on.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, that's what drove them to the Super Bowl, because they kept those scores low. You keep the Chiefs, you know, under a certain point threshold. And then look what they did with the Rams in the Super Bowl, which kept them in the game other than 2 long throws. Mm-hmm. Other than that, you know, they played to perfection to that point. So I actually think, you know, for Cincinnati, that's something that they need to build off of. And I don't think Burrow was the full reason why they got there.
I'm with you. I'm with you. Yeah. when you look at some of his playoff stats, like, again, he was good, but I think people anoint him like he's, you know, Christ reincarnated. You realize he took 9 sacks in the game before they played Kansas City. He took 9 sacks against Tennessee. They pressured him 15 times. And he took 9 sacks. That's good for 60%. That is an outrageous number of percentage of his sacks.
Yep. Every game they were in was a grind.
Yeah, man.
Throughout the whole playoffs.
And then you go back and you look at the Bills and you're like, all right, like, I was looking at some stats that everyone's already heard this because I went through it in the first part of the podcast, but they basically were, you know, it was throw it a ton and throw it. It wasn't as effective. It's funny because their offense, like, you go back and you look at their offense and it was good, but it was almost good because they, like, the way it was built more so than the effectiveness, like, they threw it a ton in like advantageous ways. And I don't even think necessarily they threw it that well, but they just threw it a ton, like when you should throw it.
Yes.
And then they threw it some more, and then they, you know, and you look, and as a result of that, like, their offense ranks 3rd in points, 5th in total yards. Like, it's, but it was, I think, more so the way it was constructed, the basically more the way that they chose to drive the car, not necessarily the performance of the car itself, that was you know, this great thing. And it's, so it's funny because people are like, hey, you know, they're due for some regression or whatever. The market certainly doesn't think that they're favorites to win the Super Bowl. I look at this offense and I'm like, they left a lot of stuff out there. Like they left a lot of stuff. And I think it's an interesting, like a lot of the stuff they did this offseason, I think sort of points to the fact that there's ways they're going to capitalize the season that they couldn't and didn't last year.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, I've had my misgivings with Dable in the past.
Yes. This is a big, it's our biggest disagreement as a friendship.
Yeah. Right? But I do agree with you how he built the offense, especially late in the season when they began running the ball more effectively. That kind of opened things up in the playoffs. And once it got to a point in that Kansas City game, you know, I believe they finally just saw that secondary, there was just huge holes in it. And mm-hmm. Josh Allen just all of a sudden went off and the play calling was perfect. Mm-hmm. You know, in the last, you know, 35, 40 minutes of that game, mm-hmm. unbelievable play calling. Mm-hmm. Dable, we'll see if he'll be missed. I feel Allen, you know, has built that confidence and he can help design that offense. And we'll see how it goes. There might be, like you said, there might be a slight regression, but at the same time, I feel like the run game is going to be much better. They bolstered the O-line.
Yeah.
And so I see it as the playbook opening up a lot more, but we'll see if they can, you know, as you said, you know, construct that offense throughout the season and make it last all the way to a Super Bowl.
So I had a strong take last year about the Bills running game. And I said, I believed it the whole time through. People were like, they can't run the ball, they can't go far. Like, it was crystal clear to me, like, what the solution to that problem was. But, like, you don't, like, it's November or it's October or it's September. Yeah. Like, you don't need to bludgeon Josh Allen into the ground. Like, you don't, that's, but when push comes to shove in January, you're going to call 17's number, right? And you don't, at that point, the risk of running him. Yes, there is more risk in running him. And with the way that he plays, like, it's not the safest thing, but the reward at that point is probably worth it, much more so than it is for a regular season game at Jacksonville, right? So like when their offense bogs down in Jacksonville, it's almost like the NBA. Like the offense looks different in the playoffs, right? Because like you should do the more optimized thing in the play, right? Like you do the more optimized thing in the playoffs, where even though it's maybe a little bit more risky. But yeah. I think James Cook's fascinating. Like, I actually did a deep dive on Singletary, and he was like, I like Singletary. Like, I think he's fun, but man, like, he left a lot out there, like in the passing game.
Oh, yeah.
Just the added element of James Cook, I think, is again, how much do running backs matter? But I think they used Singletary a lot, and I don't think they got nearly what they could from that offense with Singletary. I'm super interested to see how they deploy James Cook.
Yeah, I love, you know, Singletary's running style. I believe running the ball, he was pretty effective. But in the passing game, like you said, just massive holes. I mean, there were plays where he'd be wide open in the flat. Allen puts out a good ball, and he's got 20, 30 yards in front of him, uh-huh. and he just drops it.
Right.
Flat out drops it, or, you know, his footwork just wasn't there. So hopefully that's something he improves upon. But James Cook brings that added element, especially in the red zone. You know, he's a touchdown guy. He wants to get in the end zone. He's fierce. He runs hard. So I'm excited to definitely see him in the red zone along with O.J. Howard too.
So O.J. Howard's such a good signing. Like, yes. It's such a good set. Like, I wasn't even a fan of O.J. Howard coming out, but O.J. Howard, like, he's super effective. Like, even if it's in small, like, he's the perfect Bill right now, because you're like, all right, you kind of have, like, let's make it a little bit more versatile. And I think that that's kind of the way that their offense maybe got stuck a little bit last year. They were, you know, I think Kansas City went through the same thing, where you could deploy this, you know, kind of this too high safety look and kind of pin them, right? You wouldn't kind of let them do what they wanted to do. And I think the story of both how the Bills address the offseason as well as Kansas City, it was very much like, all right, we're not going to let ourselves be like, no, you're not going to let us be, we're not going to let you dictate to us what we're going to do.
Yeah.
We're going to be able to do different things offensively. Like, James Cook's a big part of that. And I think OJ Howard really is too. Like, and you said the other thing, I think that's, that is, I think that probably should go, shouldn't go understated, is they did make moves along their offensive line to sort of shore up some of that, some of their, you know, I think that could be to run the ball more too, which again, I don't love that as a concept, but I do think to make it a little bit more versatile, maybe you are less, you know, maybe that opens some stuff up in the passing game, just position wise. You're not allowed to hang two safeties 20 yards deep anymore on the Bills.
Yeah. I feel like they felt they needed to bolster that O-line and build at least some type of a run game. I know they, like I said, they were successful later in the year, but that needs to be, you know, more consistent throughout the season. And OJ Howard, just the sheer size of the guy, not just as a, you know, people talk about the red zone touchdown threat, but what about his blocking in the red zone?
Yeah.
You know, that's going to be key. That's going to be what pushes Singletary or James Cook in the end zone. And that threat of him maybe sneaking out for, you know, a couple TD passes as well. Plus you still have Dawson Knox, you know, having a two tight end set. The Bills really haven't had that in a while. They've had, you know, they've made some good signings. Like, we thought Croft was going to be, you know, that second guy, and they were going to have this great two tight end set, but that just did not pan out. So hopefully this does, but just the sheer size and blocking, they brought attitude to the line. They brought size to the line. That's going to make a difference for them, especially in the red zone.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is I wasn't paying a ton of attention to their interior offensive line signings, but I found it notable that they signed Roger Saffold and David Questenberry, two guards from Tennessee.
Oh yeah.
And I found that was like super, when you're like, all right, what do you think about them? Like, Tennessee has some flaws offensively. Interior toughness is not one of those flaws.
Yeah. And I'm sure the Bills coaches were like, these guys have beaten us up for the last couple of years. Right. So maybe it's time we sign them.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Because like, if we can't beat them, join them. Right. Like, they had that game against Henry, where Henry beat him up, and it's like, all right, like, we've seen this story, which I always find funny. Like, you get this, the coaches who've actually seen guys play, and they're like, oh yeah, we definitely don't want, like, yeah, we'll take them on our team. Roger Saffold, the 11th best run blocking guard in football last year, according to PFF. And the other one was Kessenberry, he was further down the list. Let's see here.
Yeah, and the Titans, just in general, that's always been a team that makes me nervous as a Bills fan.
Right.
They've had the Bills number for the last couple of years. And I think it comes to, you know, again, that physicality. They just bring it. And the Bills just get beat up in those games. You know, they're always close.
Yeah.
And the Bills have opportunities to win them. But at the end of the day, you know, they're beat up. And even the games after, you kind of watch them after they play the Titans, and they just, you know, they don't seem like they're on their game. Mm-hmm. And I know that's what Vrabel wants. That's his goal. After several years of the Bills dominating the Titans, and then Vrabel came in and he made it a point to make those changes. So I like that, you know, the Bills themselves are seeing that. They see that as an opportunity, and they're turning around themselves with O-line and D-line, as they built the D-line the same way.
Yeah. Yeah. The what's interesting is Kessenberry, so he was actually he played tackle for them. And I was just looking up the numbers. He was the fifth best run blocking tackle in the league last year, according to PFF, on like basically 100% of the snaps too. He played a ton of snaps. And then his pass blocking stuff was left a little be desired, but I wonder if they don't kick him back inside at some points and sort of use him in like a swing role.
Definitely. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it is certainly an interesting, I think that just the attitude wise, there's some interesting additions, and the Cody Ford experience maybe coming to an end with the additions that they've made along the offensive line. What do you think in terms of, like, what's success look like this year?
Success this year, definitely, you know, I don't want to see those Jacksonville Jaguar games again next year. But to be honest, I feel that was a huge learning experience for that team. You know, this year though, just remaining consistent on the defensive side of the ball as well. Like, just anytime people talk about the Bills, the two things they always said were they can't run the ball and they can't stop the run. Mm-hmm. And that was true to an extent, but they still had the top defense in the league, yardage wise. And I think that's important. We need to maintain that. And I want to see what this O-line and D-line can do. So if they're successful or have more success than last year, then I think the Bills, you know, are taking that next step. And it'll come down to a coin flip or a little bit of luck, you know, maybe with one of these AFC teams, you know, with Russell Wilson or Herbert. Who knows? You never know when it comes playoff time. But I still feel like the Bills are the best team in the AFC, and their top competitor is still the Kansas City Chiefs. Because I think it comes down to quarterback play. And if Mahomes or Allen play like they can, nobody can stop them. I don't care who's on defense.
I love it. I love it. I have a stat here. Do you want to know? I don't know. This must have been before. Yeah, this must have been before week 17. Do you want to know what the Bills record would have been last year if their one score game record was flipped on its head? So if you took the games that they lost by one score, and instead of losing by one score, they had won those games by one score.
They'd be undefeated.
It would have been 16-1. They were 11-6. They would have been 16-1. So the only game that they lost by more than a score was the Indianapolis game. They lost to Pittsburgh by a touchdown in week one at home. And again, you just go back and you look at some of the stuff that happened last year, and you come back out of it, and you, as you're sitting there watching them lose in Kansas City, you're like a week one loss to Pittsburgh. They lose to Tennessee, and that's that Monday night game. If you remember, that's the Monday night game. They go for it down like at the goal line with like less than a minute left. I think it was like 30 seconds left or something like that. They go for it instead of kicking it.
I like the call. I like that call.
Well, so here's the interesting part. So it gets better. So I was researching a little bit in preparation for that. I had questions about that call, but in a similar situation, 2 months later at Tampa, they kicked, right? You remember in the Tampa game, they're down 17. Yeah. Allen leads them to two touchdowns, right? They stop Brady and they go down, they have the ball at almost the exact same situation that they did in Tennessee. And I thought in the Tennessee game that they were the better team, I would have kicked. I thought in the Tampa game that Brady's going to beat you if he gets the ball back. So you go for it, because like, I've lived that life. Like, I know how that game, I know how that game's going to end. And it's the same way it ended against Kansas City, right? Like, you can't give him time in the ball because you're going to lose. And that's what he did. But so they lose that Tennessee game again. I could be persuaded on that one. I don't think it was egregious, but I wish they would have used the same logic in the Tampa game. But they lose at Jacksonville. They lose, they get the doors blown off at home by the Colts.
Yes.
And at that point, you're like 6-4. You're like, damn. And so they lose to Jacksonville, and it's like this just implosion. And that was actually after, and they had, it's funny because before the bye, so in week six, they played Tennessee, and they actually defended Tennessee pretty well, but lose. And then they come back from the bye, they blow the doors off Miami, and then they lose to Jacksonville in that stupid game. They beat the Jets 45-17 in a revenge game, and then they lose the next week 41-15, and they're 6-4, and we're like, what the heck?
Yeah.
And then they go to New Orleans and beat New Orleans on Thanksgiving on short rest, and then they come back, and that's the game where they lose to the Patriots in that stupid win fiasco. Were you there, by the way?
Yes.
How was that? And if you had to like compare it between like the birth of your first child to like having a root canal without Novocaine, like how does that sort of rank?
So, to be honest, that game, I thought the playoff game was worse.
Really?
The Patriots. Yeah, because the wind was bad. It was horrible. But I mean, that whatever, -5. I don't even remember what the temperature was. I just remember sitting in the game and it was like my lungs were frozen.
But you're talking about the playoff game, right? The Saturday night at 8:15 is a home playoff game in Buffalo.
I think the only difference was we were smacking the Patriots in the playoff game, so it felt a lot better than what happened in the windy game. That again, just some drops in the end zone, you know, similar to the Jacksonville game. There were a lot of points in the game where we had it, you know, and that's what I love this progression of the Bills. And even, like I said, even those were learning experiences. And you go back to the Pittsburgh game too. There was a moment at the start of the second half where Trey White makes this amazing play on a ball, gets an interception. We're on the 18-yard line, and he gets flagged on a hold that happens every single play of every game. And, you know, Pittsburgh just turned it around from that point. And I'm not blaming the refs or anything, but just little things like that constantly happen to the Bills. It's like we couldn't overcome those little things. It started right week one of the season. But, you know, I think going forward, I see this team not making those same mistakes this year. They're going to play tougher games just in general because it's a tougher conference. But I think they're better positioned. And I hope, but I don't think there's going to be another situation like that Jacksonville game this year.
Yeah, if you just gave us back like the Jacksonville game, if you give us back this, the Pittsburgh game, you know what I mean? Like you just give us a couple of those games back. Like, this thing's totally different. I don't know. It could, like, they left stuff on the board. They actually hit their under last year. Their over under was 11.5. They came in under the number, which is interesting. But just, and their expected, again, their expected win loss record was 13-4, right? So they underperformed in one score games, which are totally fluky. Least points allowed, third most points scored. So, like, I don't know, all those things point in the right direction. Like, and I think the betting market's recognizing it. And I just hope, like, again, I should do it now before anything happens, but, you know, just reserve some rooms for AFC, you know, for the for the last week of the AFC playoffs, just in case. I just want to be there just in case it happens.
Well, just bring a camper and just.
Yes. Absolutely. Some tables, bring some tables.
Yeah,
we'll bring a microphone, just see what happens. It'll be great. It'll be good. All right, cool, man. What do you, well, let me ask you this one before you get out of here. What was your thoughts when they drafted Josh Allen?
So I think actually we were kind of texting back and forth on that. I was up in the air. Obviously, the other QBs in the draft, I wasn't really hard pressed on to begin with. Everybody was big on Baker Mayfield. I was not. I just did not. He looked great, but I didn't like his size. I didn't like his arm. I thought Allen had the better arm, but I knew that Allen would have had to come in and make a lot of changes. But to be honest, you know, trusting Bean and McDermott, I wasn't opposed to it. And I just didn't really know too much about him either. Just, you know, watching some of his highlights and very chaotic, you know, guy, that's for sure. So it was nerve wracking at first. It was like, we've seen this story before. But, you know, at the same time, guys who come in the NFL, what's the most important is mentally, can they take that leap? Can they adjust? So for him, it was, you know, improving his accuracy. Clearly, he's done that. He's made all the improvements he's needed to do. I love his attitude. He's a Buffalo guy through and through, that's for sure. And, you know, they said that day one. You know, Bean said that. McDermott said that. Everybody on the team said that, even through his interview process and everything. And they were right. They were 100% right. So that actually, that moment and now seeing his progression, that built even more trust, you know, in what I see in Brandon Bean. So I don't even worry about the draft anymore. I say, I don't, whoever Bean drafts, I trust. Got it.
Right. It's figured out, right?
Yeah. It doesn't matter. Right. They, you know, these analysts, you know, when you're watching the draft, they could say, oh, I wouldn't have taken him here. You know, the value's not that. I don't care what they say anymore. It's like, I trust Brandon Bean to make the right moves, and he's done so. He hasn't let us down yet. So,
right.
No, well, Doug Whaley.
Yeah. Yeah. The, he ends up being, he was, Josh Allen was Bean's first draft pick. So they hired him in May of 17. So after the draft, because they fired Doug Whaley after the 2017 draft, and they hired McDermott. Sorry, they hired Brandon Bean, and then Josh Allen was his first draft pick. It was Allen, and then they traded up for Tremaine Edmonds. So it was a trade up for an off ball linebacker. That sounds like something the Jets would do, but not. Yeah. Be that as it may. Hey, by the way, I need your comment on this. I have a theory about this, and I believe it was the 2014 Buffalo Bills. It was the year that they had Marquise Goodwin, they had Chris Hogan, they had Robert Woods, and they had Sammy Watkins. And they had four wide receivers on their team that ended up, people trash Doug Whaley. They ended up, all four of those guys ended up starting for other teams. And I can't find another recent example of that where that happened. I guess it's rare that they walk out the door like that, but like if you get four of them, like you would figure one of them would stay. So maybe there's some bias in that, but it is a rare accomplishment to have four wide receivers on your team that all go and start for other offenses. And they're good too. Well, Watkins was actually probably the biggest letdown of that group, but him and Marquise Goodwin, but it's interesting that like they all of those guys like went on to varying degrees of success in other places. And I thought Doug Whaley got like, there was some really good talent on some of those teams that I don't think, like, I think the choice of coach would have been
big time. Yeah.
Was probably where he went wrong more so than necessarily maybe the picking of the players that happened.
Yeah. And not being able to re-sign guys specifically that. And like, there's not even just those receivers, there's guys on defense, offensive line that still to this day, I hear their name when watching games and I always turn to my girlfriend and just say, X Bill. X Bill. Right. And you know, they're doing success. They're being, you know, they're all successful and they're all from the Doug Whaley era. So I think talent wise, he always did a good job. Like you said, the coaching, and then he could never keep players. After watching Ryan Fitzpatrick roast him during Fred Jackson's little roast party or whatever it was, I kind of got the gist of how the players felt about him,
right?
And I think that's why a lot of players were leaving Buffalo. We'd always say, why are these guys leaving Buffalo? You're a solid team, great talent. It was the coaching staff and it was just the attitude and culture in the building.
Yeah. And then he ends up hiring McDermott, which is interesting, and then they let him go. Like it was
a forced hire.
Yeah, right, right. You always wonder how that goes, but it's like he was part of the Rex Ryan hiring. He was like, yeah, but then he hired McDermott, and he was like, yeah, well, it was like, come to find out, he didn't actually hire him.
I think the Rex Ryan hiring might have been one of the most disappointing moments.
Remember his truck? Remember that truck? he had that Bill's truck that just absurd truck. And actually, I think you were with me when we saw it. Remember, we went to a tailgate party where it was actually Jim Kelly's bus, and he wasn't there, but it was like his RV.
We saw Thurman Thomas.
Yep. That was the second time we've actually met Thurman Thomas. Remember, we met Thurman Thomas in a bar.
Yeah, he was in the nightclub that I was running.
He was in the nightclub, and it was like, hey, you're Thurman Thomas. He's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And I was like, oh, thanks. This went well. I was like, never meet your heroes, I guess.
Yeah, he wasn't. He's kind of like that, you know.
Yeah, yeah. You're like, let's go. That's Thurman Thomas. Go say hi to him. And I was like, I don't know. Is Thurman Thomas? Like, yeah, it definitely is. It's definitely Thurman Thomas. It's like, yeah. Well, it's disappointing. So it's funny. The biggest thing that I'm happy that I was wrong about was Josh Allen.
Yeah,
I was. I did not think that he had this in him, but they obviously got it right. And I am with you now that I largely like they which what I for the longest time never felt great about was I always thought that they didn't have like a good direction. And especially early on in McDermott's thing, I was like, he's just another sort of Bills coach, wouldn't go for it on fourth downs, constantly doing sort of boneheaded, what I thought were boneheaded things. But this, the sort of Josh Allen era of this front office and of this coaching staff, I think has been like, they've done everything right in terms of developing him. And I think it's been, and developing their team and sort of the decisions that they made, like it's clear that they deserve a lot of, you know, a lot of the adulation that they get because like they're good. You know what I mean? And that's, it's nice to have that after floundering for all those years. And by the way, you know, people that you and I just, we got together recently, I hadn't seen you in forever. But we were discussing, everyone wanted said the Bills should have done a squib kick when they played Kansas City to try to run out some of the clock. Like, I have a long memory, and I know you do too. Like, how has that gone down in Buffalo Bills history before?
Because, yeah, horribly.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I never got that. They were like, oh, yeah, it's bound to work. And I was like, I've heard this before.
It's just I never understood the logic. I heard it constantly,
right.
And it's just too risky of a move. And 13 seconds left, number one defense in the league, kick the ball through the end zone and say you got to travel all the way down this field on the number one defense in the league in 13 seconds and get 3 points on the board, by the way.
Yeah.
So that's, and back to kind of like McDermott. They've done an excellent job. They've been perfect in every aspect of building the team. That's where I want to see them grow, is in those situations. Mm-hmm. You know, it even goes back to Houston, the Houston game in the playoffs. Yeah. It goes back to the AFC Championship against Kansas City. And in this past season, there's kind of moments in those games where I felt they got a little outcoached. But just like, you know, Josh Allen's young and has developed, McDermott has developed as well. And as long as they continue to do that, they got, you know, five to 10 years of success out of them.
Yes. The solution to their problems is cut your punter. Just don't roster a punter during the playoffs and things will be fine. Like it'll go, stop punting in the playoffs, especially when you have to go to Kansas City, which hopefully we're not going to have to do anymore.
If I could hear Al Michaels introduce our punter to Bills fans every couple of weeks, cause we haven't seen him in three games. That's life goals right there.
100%. It's 100% what I'm looking for. All right, Steve, thank you for coming on. I appreciate this. We're going to have you back and it's going to be good. Hopefully a celebratory podcast at some point soon. We'll talk Bills again, but thanks for coming on, man. I really appreciate it. I hope you all enjoyed this extended Bills edition. This was therapeutic. I've been able to now recover from the 2022 AFC divisional round of the playoffs, and we can move forward now. We can put that behind us, and it's on to Cincinnati. And until next time, continue embracing the variance. We will talk again very soon.